Well, good morning, and now I am fully rested. Yesterday morning at this time, I was not so much. It was a rough morning. I do have to apologize for being such a grouch. I was a curmudgeon all day, and it was not... I was not thinking closely enough and well enough to treat people civilly the way I want everybody to be talked to. So I'm apologizing if I offended you yesterday. I'm sure I offended some people just because of my stance, but there was a lady that called in that I must apologize to because she was being very kind and had a legitimate concern, and kind of put it off. I don't always do that, but every once in a while I get that way, and usually when I haven't had enough sleep. So, you know, as a what does the Catholic Church call it when you ask for forgiveness? Mea culpa or something like that. I'm going to do that today, and what I'm going to do during this show, oh, by the way, I forgot to tell you what the show is. The show is On the Air, and I'm Glenn Coble, and I'll be on for the next hour and 45 minutes. But this morning, I thought, what could I do to make it a little nicer show rather than talk? We're not talking about politics today at all. Well, we might touch on it, but we're not going to talk about it a lot. I am going to mention something that Scott talked about just before I got on. Today will be an airing of good news and kind thoughts. I'm going to read several inspirational short stories. One of them, and it's a short story, but one of them is only three paragraphs long. That's a really short story, but it's a neat story. And I'm going to read, I think I have about six or seven of them, and I'm going to read them to you. As you know, I have a little dyslexia, so I don't read as well as some people, but I do a pretty fair job of oral interpretation, as long as I read slowly and hold the notes right to my face and have my glasses on. I usually do okay. Not great, but okay. So that's what we're going to do today, and if you'd like to call in, if I'm in the middle of a story, I probably won't answer the phone, but as soon as the story's over, you're more than welcome to call in to 740-383-9944. Let me say that again since I had a little hiccup in the middle there. 740-383-9944. And then later this afternoon at 12:15 till 1 o'clock, we'll have Swap Shop where you can call in and sell all your tchotchkes and stuff like that. Or you can call in and announce your current events, like you're going to have an open house, or you're going to have a bazaar or something like that. You can call in and tell us that. We'll carry it for you, and hopefully it'll bring a few more people to your doorstep. We understand that we're going to go through a slow time here with Swap Shop with the COVID-19 going on. We know that people don't want people coming knocking at their door, but anyway. One of the things that I wanted to, the political thing that I wanted to talk about, Scott brought up an interesting point. What would happen if all of our politicians, local politicians, would not have an R or a D or an I next to their name? Or just make them all I's. But no, they were all unidentified by their party. What would happen? Now, I thought, when I first heard that, I thought, now that's a great way to have people vote for the person. However, and I told Scott when I came in, when he was off the air, this happened to me when I ran for township trustee. Township trustee is one of those positions. It's called nonpartisan, which means you don't announce publicly, whether you're a Democrat or Republican. Obviously, you can be any of the above. You can also be an independent, but you don't announce it. It's not part of what you put on your signs sorry about that. Or, you know, you're not supposed to make it clear what party you're running for. When I was running for the position of township trustee, it was made very clear by my opponents. I don't know how they did it, but everybody and his brother knew that I was the only Democrat running. I'm sorry about that. There were three positions, two of them were being voted on, and everybody knew that I was the black sheep in the family. I still did okay. I didn't knock them dead, but I had a pretty reasonable response, and I was shocked that I got as many votes as I did. I did a lot of door-to-door knocking, which helped. As a matter of fact, at one point, I'll tell you, I didn't know, I knew who the other township trustees were, but I didn't associate the name with my walking list that I had, and I walked up and knocked on the door of one of my opponents, and I was broadly brought down. What are you here for? You know, that type of thing. I was not welcome at that house for some reason or other. That person, by the way, still is one of the township trustees. Anyway, I think it's a good idea to not think about whether they're an RID, especially locally. Nationally, I understand it because there's a national platform that people run on, and I think it's a good idea to have people know where you stand. The other problem that seems to arise is that if you're let's say you're don't really identify with either the Republicans or the Democrats, so you're basically an independent, the chance of you getting even looked at are very slim. You almost have to be an R or a D and endorsed by that party to get any votes. I don't think you can run, I don't think two R's can run on the presidential slate. I think you have to be the official R or the official D to run for president. You can't call yourself a Republican and just get on there by paying the fee and getting the right number of endorsements. It doesn't work that way. You can be an independent, and you could probably be a bull moose, or you could be a libertarian, or a communist. You could be anything, but you couldn't be an R or a D. And they only allow one RDR. I or whatever it, per category, so nationally. Anyway, I hope that I'm going to save this really short story, I think, until we're really almost out of time on some segment, because it's only three paragraphs long. It happened to jump up at me right the very first one. Let me read this one. It's called The Seasons of Life. Now, these are all stories, inspirational stories. And we'll talk a little bit about when I'm done. If you want to call in again, 740-383-9944. There was a man who had four sons. He wanted his sons to learn not to judge things too quickly. So he sent them each on a quest, in turn, to go and look at a pear tree that was a great distance away. The first son went into the winter, the second in the spring, the third in the summer, and the youngest son went in the fall. When they had all gone and come back, he called them together to describe what they had seen. The first son said the tree was ugly, bent, and twisted. The second son said no, it was covered with green buds and full of promise. The third son disagreed. He said it was laden with blossoms that smelled so sweet and looked so beautiful. It was the most graceful thing he had ever seen. The last son disagreed with them all. He said it was ripe and drooping with fruit, full of life and fulfillment. The man then explained to his sons that they were all right, because they had each seen seen it during one season in the tree's life. He told them that you cannot judge a tree or a person by only one season, and that the essence of who they are and the pleasure, joy, and love that come from that life can only be measured at the end when all the seasons are up. If you give up when it's winter, you will miss the promise of your spring, the beauty of your summer, fulfillment of your fall. Don't judge a life by one difficult season. Don't let the pain of one season destroy the joy of all the rest. I like that little story. One of the reasons why I like this story is it really does seem to apply exactly to me. I'm in that fall season, I guess you would call it. Late fall, maybe. I hope it's early fall, but at 74 years old, I've been through the other three seasons pretty successfully, or pretty quickly is more like the term. How about you? If you're a young person, do you understand that? Do you see that you might be in a season when you're not even ready to blossom? You're not ready to even bear fruit. And we're not speaking metaphorically. I mean, I'm not speaking of having children. Fruit trees are a little different than humans. Most humans have their fruit earlier in life than apple trees do. But anyway, it makes you stop and think. One of the things that I enjoyed about this particular thing is it points out that each season, you can change from one season to the next. Now, humans are not quite, they live longer than, well, they don't live longer than an apple tree, but they don't have four seasons each year. This is referring to the seasons of your life. My early season, when before I had even started to blossom, I guess, or before I had started to put buds out there, I, like most of us, thought nothing of other people. I thought only of myself and what toy was I going to get at Christmas. We all did that when we were young. So hopefully that we all had enough money that mom and dad could have gotten us those toys. But you know, even in poor families, as a little one, you're not so concerned about other people, and you're pretty much self-absorbed. As we get into our teenage years and maybe our 20s, everything is about still about us, but everything also is incorporating all those people that you've started to notice around us, and wanting to be liked by all those people around us. I'm always interested in watching young people on television, and how I sit there and watch them trying to impress other young people around them with their makeup, their hair, their dress, or lack thereof. And I think, boy, you're missing the point. But then, in fact, I'm missing the point. I was that way when I was young. Those of us who were lucky enough to be, I'm going to use the word popular. I'm not sure that's exactly the right word. But those of us who were at that point tended to forget about those that were not. But we absorbed everybody around us that was, and we made fun of people that weren't. And I find that really hard to watch now that I'm 74 years old. And I watch my 16-year-old granddaughter, who is, like all 16-year-old young women, beautiful and vivacious and full of life. Anyway, I get concerned. And then I moved into my older years, you know, that time where you are starting to blossom, and people are starting to say, hey, that person has this trait, or they have that trait, or they're a good worker, or they're a good thinker, or they're not so good at the job that they're doing, or they're not so adept at being skillful and intelligent. But there is a time there that you get to. And then after that's over, and I've already entered this retirement seemed to help crystallize this in my brain, that as long as I had lived my life in a good manner, I didn't care what other people felt about me. And I still don't. I mean, of course, I'd like to be liked, but I want to be liked for what I do and who I am and what I care about. I don't want to be liked because I have a lot of money. I don't want to be liked because I can afford to have the right cosmetic surgery so I still look gorgeous. But anyway, that's kind of the story that I just read to you. And I hope that I hope you'll think about that through the day. And here we're getting close to a break, so you're listening to WWGH here in Marion, Ohio. I'm Glenn Coble, and the show is on the air.
Scott, you know there have always been rumors that Florence Harding murdered President Harding.
Yes, I have heard that.
Well, it's a bunch of bunk. I'm here to state without doubt Florence Harding did not murder President Harding. Now, Nan Britton. Jury's out.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Here on the air, and I'm Glenn Coble. I hope you enjoyed that first story. I'm going to tell six or seven stories throughout the next hour and quarter, whatever it is. I might not get through all of them, but if you have anything, or if they inspire you to pass on some wisdom to the other people that are out there listening right now, I encourage you to call 740-383-9944, and we'll talk about it. Like I said, I have seven stories, so I can make this work without. But if you have that compulsion, I've got to say something about my seasons that I've gone through, I'd be more than happy to hear it. Yesterday, I think I went through all four seasons in one day. I was self-absorbed. I was not thinking right. I was proud of what I said. And then at the end, I thought, whoop, I must have made some mistakes there. Uh-oh. Now, I'm going to have to stop just for a second because I've probably got a robocall coming over on my phone. Exactly. I don't know anybody in Stanford, Texas, so I'm going to cut that off. I usually turn off my sound, and that's what I'm going to do right now. And then my wife calls me, and I have my sound turned off, and she gets mad at me. Oh, well. Hey, I've got another story that I'm going to read here, and this one is called Our Value. And I hope this inspires you to think. That's really what I hope today is going to do for you. You don't have to answer. You don't have to speak up. You don't have to do anything. All I ask, and this is what I was doing yesterday, is asking that people think. We are so caught up in a world where we shoot our mouth off before we open our ears. And I really, and I do it too. I'm not free of that problem. I do shoot my mouth off again, like I did yesterday, without opening my ears. I try in my late years, like that tree that is dropping its fruit to the ground, I try to pass on the wisdom that I have learned, or the wisdom that I think I have learned, or maybe it's not wisdom at all, but I try to pass on what I think over 74 years I've learned right and wrong to my children. One of the things I told my wife not too long ago, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, that my job now that I'm in my 70s is to show my children how to die with grace and how to die with honor and dignity. And I hope I can do that. Now, some people are not offered that opportunity. Some people are stricken with things that that shouldn't happen to people, you know, diseases and accidents and things like that. And they aren't given the opportunity. But so far, so good for me. And so I've been working for the last 3 years to show my children that to love each other is a heck of a lot more important than to hate each other and to be vindictive. And to be honest with yourself is far more important than telling other people how to act. And being honest with yourself is far more important than lying to other people so you can get your way. I did that when I was 14. Anyway, this next story is called Our Value. A well-known speaker started off his seminar by holding up a $20 bill. In the room, there were 200. He asked, "Who would like this $20 bill?" Hands shot up. He said, "I'm going to give this $20 to one of you, but at first, let me do this." He proceeded to crump up the dollar bill. He then asked, "Who still wants it?" Still, the hands were up in the air. "Well," he replied, "what if I do this?" And he dropped it on the ground and started to ground it into the floor with his shoe. He picked it up, now crumply and filthy. "Now who still wants it?" Still, the hands went into the air. My friends, you have all learned a very valuable lesson. No matter what I did to the money, you still wanted it because it did not decrease the value. It was still worth $20. Many times in our life, we are dropped, crumpled, and grounded into the dirt by decisions that we make and the circumstances that come our way. We feel as though we are worthless. But no matter what has happened or what will happen, you will never lose your value. You are special. Don't ever forget it. A great story to follow my my little description there of going through life and learning things that you have to learn. Scott and I argue occasionally on our show on Wednesday, and sometimes I can't find anything else to respond to him with, but I say, "But you're young." And that's not very fair. There are young people that are brilliant. Scott is a fairly bright guy. I must admit that. I won't say he's brilliant, but he's a fairly bright guy. There are people I watch on television. As you know, I watch a lot of political stuff, especially this year. And there are some 20-somethings and 30-somethings. I don't know how old they are. But they're on the air. Again, Scott will disagree with me. I think they're on the air because they're beautiful. But they're also brilliant. And see, the networks can find that type of person. They're one in a million. You know, they're absolutely gorgeous, male or female. And they're brilliant beyond their age. And but I think there are a lot of them that as they go through those years, you know, they're in the middle of their second, you know, they're starting to, the greenery is coming out of the tree, and the little buds are starting to show, and they're in that stage. Some of them are already starting to blossom, but they're early in their stage, and I bet there are several of them. I won't be around to see it, but I bet there are several of them in their 30s that you will see as you get older, if you're younger than I am. You'll see them later on television when they're in their 50s and 60s. And if you had a chance to ask them, what would you do if you were talking to your 30-year-old predecessor, if you were talking to yourself 30 years ago, those people would have a lot of things that they would have changed. We do learn with age. The worst thing that you can do as you get older is to not learn, to not listen. I learn every day. And I'm not saying that as a, oh, look at me type of thing. I'm saying that I don't have any choice. I'm going to learn just by stepping off the curb. I've had my mother-in-law live till she was 99. And I think, the last year or two were kind of rough for her, but I think she learned something every day, even till she was 97. I know that my mother learned something every day until the horrible day that I had to pick her up off the floor and take her to the hospital for her last ride. I think we the noble human being will constantly try to learn throughout their entire life. It doesn't make any difference if you know you're on death's doorstep. Continue to learn. It's better and more fun than to just shut down. The people that close their ears, close their eyes, close their minds, I can't imagine going through life like that. I find that a very uninspiring to live that way. And I hope as I get older, I hope I'm going to continue to get older. I hope that I will be a lifelong learner. I couldn't remember what the term was. Anyway, we're getting down to a short period here, and I'm going to read that really short little, if I can find it. Here it is. This is a short story, and it's called The Starfish Story. An old man walked across the beach until he came across a young boy throwing something into the breaking waves. Upon closer inspection, the old man could see that the boy was tossing stranded starfish from the sandy beach back into the ocean. "What are you doing, young man?" he asked. "If the starfish are still on the beach, when the sun rises, they will die," the boy said. "That's ridiculous. There are thousands of miles of beach and millions of starfish. It doesn't matter how many you throw in. You can't make a difference." The young boy said, "It matters to this one," the boy said as he threw another starfish into the waves. "And it matters to this one. And it matters to me." What a great thing. Always, always try to help those people that you can as you're going through life. I know that makes me a bleeding heart liberal. But if you'll read your Bible that you all profess to read, read the parts of the New Testament where Jesus' parables are brought up. Some of those parables are so powerful, even though they're so simple. The prodigal son, I love the prodigal son. That's a terrific story. Now, as you know, I am an atheist, but that doesn't mean I don't follow the teachings of Christ. I also tried to follow the teachings of other great religious leaders. Of the few books that I've read, I have read the Bible twice. When you're a minister's son, you have to do that. It's required. Also, I was trying to get a God and Country Award from Boy Scouts, and so therefore I did that. But the things that I have read are usually, I'm not quite sure what to call them, but they're accounts of great men and women, and what they have said and what they have done. I did try to read, will continue this, I read speeches to you. They're for educational purposes only. Not necessarily are they my opinions, but the one that has struck home with me so much was Sojourner Truth, the abolitionist and anti-slavery woman of the 1800s. Her rough speech belied the fact that she was brilliant, and I just really truly enjoy reading the few little snippets of what she said in her life, and I try to learn something from them. You don't have to agree with everything you read, but you should always listen to everything you read. Listen to it in your head. And sometimes it helps me with my reading problem to read out loud, and I remember it better. Well, we'll be back with On the Air here in just a couple minutes.
Nan Britton, the mother of President Harding's only child, wrote the first tell-all book called The President's Daughter.
Yes, it is a very detailed book, should we say?
Wow, is it detailed? I've seen instruction manuals that were less detailed.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
GTG, BRB, OMW, be there in a few. You may think that these kinds of texts are fine because of their length, and you can easily send them at a stoplight. But no, answering one text can take your attention away from the road for 5 seconds. And traveling at 55 miles an hour, that's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Make good decisions. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopRex.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Back here on the air, and I'm Glenn Coble. You're listening to WWGH, and I'm struggling with my pot, not the green stuff, the thing that adjusts the sound that I'm making, kind of scratchy. The other type of pot, I guess, is not that scratchy. Been a long time since I had any relationship with that other type of pot. I did grow up in the 60s, remember? All right. You're listening to Glenn Coble here on the air. And I've got another story, an inspirational story I'm going to read to you in this final segment of the first hour. And then I've got a couple more that I'll read you next hour. And you're more than welcome to call in and respond to these things. If you want to, 740-383-9944, 740-383-9944, or just sit back and listen. I wish, if I don't do anything in my tenure here at WWGH, it's to get one more person to start listening. We all do a lot of yammering, but I'm not sure that we listen very much. I think this year's election is an example of that. Very little listening was done by some of the people involved. And I think that's the wrong way to govern. I think listening should be your prime requirement. I think our leaders need to listen closer because there are brilliant people out there telling them what to do, and so many of them, their egos are so large they don't want to hear what those people tell them. And I'm not talking one party or the other. I'm talking all people that are involved in politics. Now, one of the things that people told me I was doing wrong when I ran for office was I won't say one thing. There were several things that I did wrong while I was running for office. But the one thing I did do right was I did listen to the people. I'm not sure. It's hard to quantify that. People can't go home and say, oh, I know that Glenn Coble, he really listened to me. I don't think people do that. The only way that the politicians can show that they're listening is through their example of their work, doing things that make a change, make life better for all of us. And I don't mean giant better. I mean little tiny better, right? Things that people probably won't even notice that you had anything to do with, but it makes their life a little bit better. Now, a good politician, in my mind, is one that doesn't care whether he got credit for that. As long as people start to feel their life is getting better, I think they'll vote for you. Now, it's hard. Well, like in my situation, it's hard when you're a newbie to make people know that, because they've never had you at the helm. They didn't know that you could steer the ship straight. And that is really important in politics. How do you get that ship to go straight? And it never does, by the way. I used to race sailboats, and I can guarantee you we never went from one point to the next point straight in a race. There was also always a lot of jigging and jagging. We would come about many, many times to get to where we were going. And that's kind of what politics does. It goes along a line, and then it looks forward and it says, well, our goal is now moved over to the right. So you have to come about or jibe, depending on whether you're going downwind or upwind. You have to come about going upwind, and because most of the time you're going upwind in politics, come about and go to the right. Now you would probably call that starboard. But anyway, so you turn the boat, and now you find yourself going a little bit too much to the right. And then you have to come about again and go to the left, and you sort of zigzag your way towards your goal. All the time making progress. That's very important. All that time you have to make progress, or you'll never get to your goal. All right. I'm going to read this next inspirational story, and it's called Building Your House. Are you ready? You don't have to take notes on any of this, by the way. You will not have a test. All right. An elderly carpenter was ready to retire. He told his employer contractor of his plans to leave the house building business, to live more leisurely life with his wife and enjoy his extended family. He would miss the paycheck each week, but he wanted to retire. They could get by. The contractor was sorry to see his good worker go and asked if he could build just one more house as a personal favor. The carpenter said okay, but over time it was easy to see that his heart was not in his work. He resorted to shoddy workmanship and using inferior materials. It was an unfortunate way to end the dedicated career. When the carpenter finished his work, his employer came to inspect the house. Then he handed the front door key to the carpenter and said, "This is your house, my gift to you." The carpenter was shocked. What a shame! If he had only known he was building his own house, he would have done it much better. So, it is with us. We build our lives a day at a time, often putting less of our best into the building. Then with a shock, we realize we have to live in that house that we've built. If we could have done it over, we would do much differently. But you cannot go back. You are a carpenter, and every day your hammer and nail place a board or erect a wall. Sometimes, once said, life is do-it-yourself project. Your attitude and the choice you make help build the house of your life of tomorrow. Therefore, build wisely. I like that story. And I often think of that sort of thought when I'm talking to my children. Believe it or not, I have a son that's, I think, 47 and one that's 39 and a daughter that's, I'm guessing, 42, something like that, 43. When I talk to them anymore, now that I'm older, and we only talk by phone now that we have this COVID thing going on, but every time I talk with any one of the three, even it goes down to some of my more elderly grandchildren. I have one grandchild that's, well, two grandchildren that are 16. The rest of them are younger than that. But when I talk to them now, and this is not true from my past, but now I think what I'm saying when I talk to them and how that's going to affect them after I'm gone. That goes along with what I said earlier, that I'm trying to show them the way to pass on with dignity, with honor, that type of thing. It's something I think we should all try to attain, that when you go at your funeral, your children have a true loss, not just, I'm not going to have the mom and dad around to give me money when I need it. I'm not going to have mom and dad around to take me to the train station, you know, that sort of thing. I'm hoping that when I pass, and I don't want my children to be sad, I hope my children, when I pass, will say to each other, wasn't he a great dad? He taught me so much. Even though I'm not a good teacher, and I was a terrible father. Well, not terrible. I didn't beat my children. I did spank my children. but I always loved them. I loved them less when I was younger because I was more in that early stage that we talked about earlier. My tree was just blossoming, just starting to blossom, and I had buds on my tree. I was not to the point where I was actually bearing fruit. So I was not as good a father as I would like to have been. And that takes us to this last story. I was building my house way back then. My house is where I will live in my children's minds after I'm gone, or my grandchildren's minds. I was not doing such a great job. So now I'm lucky, and you too are lucky if you're in my age group. You've been able to grow through life, and now you have the opportunity to pass that on. And it's not morbid. I'm hoping to live to be 120, so I've got several years to go. But it could be I'm living till next week when COVID takes me away. It could be I'm living for the next hour and a half when I step off the curb and some truck drives me down here on Center Street. So I think you have to think about those things as you get older. I've become far more philosophical as I've gotten older than I was when I was young, because life was something that was never going to end. And I was never going to have to worry about it because I was going to live forever. Well, we all know that doesn't go, right? It was never brought home more than when my friend Charlie Evers passed away this past year. The saddest passing in my life was my sister. But Charlie was a sad passing. And Charlie and I were only friends for about 2 years. And I'm saying friends. I had known him longer, but we got to be pretty good friends. Maybe this this final year when I was engineering his radio show, and he got mad at me. I got mad at him. We both liked each other. You know, actually, we never got mad at each other. We just disagreed with each other, and it's kind of the thing. I hope that Scott, when I pass, I hope Scott says, I disagreed with him on a lot of stuff, but we agreed that we liked each other. And that's an important point as you get older. I don't think that I have to have everybody like me, but I want everybody to respect me. And I try, and I don't get this done, but I try to respect everybody I come in contact with. It's hard to respect people that you see on TV. You just don't know them. But the people that I come in contact with, I try to find a way inside of me, even if I absolutely disagree with them, I try to find a way to say to myself, respect that person's life. They've got problems. They've got joys. They've got all sorts of stuff going on in their life that I know nothing about. So I ought to give them the benefit of the doubt. I hope that you can do that. I hope that you are a kind person, a person with empathy. I hope you're a person that has learned, and this is a learned skill, has learned to tell the truth about everything. Not because you're telling it the way that it is, but you're telling what you feel. We'll be back after this break, and we'll talk a little bit more and have a few more inspirational stories.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, LP, Marion, Ohio.